Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to another exciting edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader. Coming up, you will have the super fans of the NFC West. Yes, our first NFC division preview. If you've missed our three previous division previews, they're all from the AFC, the AFC East, the AFC North, and the AFC South. You're going to want to go back and check those out. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, or you can check it out at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. Basically, anywhere where the fine podcasts are heard, you will find the Next Fan Up podcast. The NFC West, it's an interesting one, and we'll definitely be diving into it. I will be sharing my thoughts on this division. By the way, my thoughts are quite different than what the superfans think, but we want to know what your thoughts are. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can always tweet us at NFU Podcast, and of course, check out all the things that we've got going on Facebook. That's facebook.com/NFU podcast, or of course, just search Next Fan Up on Facebook. The page is right there. It's real easy to do. We have our top 10 players of all time for every team in the NFL on our Facebook page. I guarantee there's going to be players on there that you don't agree with. And there's players that were probably left off lists that you're going to want to see on there. Send us your comments and your kind regards. All right, let's get to the NFC West. I bring you the super fans for the Cardinals, Seahawks, Rams, and 49ers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Next Fan Up, the NFL podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm your Seahawks super fan, Justin. I will be guiding the super fan starship through today's show. Joining me today are James from the Texans. How's it going, James?
Oh, it's great, Justin. I'm down in the Red Baton City in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah? How's Louisiana treating you? Have you gotten drunk yet?
I mean, it's Louisiana. I mean, they issue you a beer as you get off the plane. So it's a great time. Walk around the streets, open container laws. Always fun in Louisiana.
Nice. We should all be so lucky. I feel like if I ever went to Louisiana, I would carry around a trombone just so somebody thought I was part of a band. Representing the 49ers, we got Charlie. What's up, Charlie?
What up? Just ready for another fantastic 49ers season.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a... nothing but hopes and dreams at this point, I'm sure, unless your quarterback's going to be Blaine Gabbert.
I think you hit it on the head.
And we got our good buddy Jared, the Rams super fan. How's it going, Jared?
Doing well, hoping to go 7-9 or 8-8 this year again, but with a rookie quarterback, with hopes of next year going well.
All right, and finally we have Dr. Jones himself, Brian, representing the Cardinals. How is it going, Brian?
Hey, it's going great, and you're talking about Blaine Gabbert. I'm just counting the days until future Hall of Famer Drew Stanton puts his hands underneath center about week 6 this season.
Oh, man, just be glad you are past the John Skelton, Max Hall days.
Exactly.
Okay, so we got a packed show, keeping with the ongoing theme. We're going to start off with our Game of Thrones comparisons, then we'll cover our all-divisions team. Spoilers, a lot of Seahawks and a lot of Cardinals. Then finally, we'll go through our divisional previews, and we will wrap it up. So, James, why don't you go ahead and take it away and tell us who our teams are in Game of Thrones.
All right. So for those that haven't listened to the previous shows, kind of the general gist of this is that there are several right answers. However, we have to fit 32 people to 32 teams, so some sacrifices have to be made. However, there are definitely wrong answers. So, for example, the Cleveland Browns are never going to be Robb Stark. With that being said as a preface, we're going to go with Arizona, them being, nice and alphabetical. And a character who's come up more this season, but it had taken a several-season hiatus, it's Beric Dondarrion, who's also known as the Lightning Lord. You might remember him as the guy who lost to Sandor Clegane with the Flaming Sword. When he had a chance to end the Hound's life. Now, why I picked him, he is known for being a feared and flashy swordsman, but he's never been able to put it together when the time really matters. And to me, flashy swordsman just screams Bruce Arians football and throwing the ball deep, 6 out of 7 plays. Barrick is also aging with a lot of talk of how he doesn't have many opportunities left. But anytime somebody strikes him down, as if back from the dead, he just gets raised up. And, you know, they're the Arizona Cardinals yet again. Ageless wonder of Carson Palmer leading them for another season, or at least a partial season. So what do you guys think of that one?
Very apt. I like that a lot. He was in the latest episode as well, so very topical.
I was about to say the same thing. Very topical. I agree.
All right. So moving on, we'll do this alphabetically, and that brings me to Los Angeles. And so naturally, there's going to be a couple of teams that fit a little bit better than others. I feel L.A. is just, you know, spot on. And for them, I picked Walder Frey. They like to think he's very important, but the entire league just kind of laughs behind his back. The entire worth of L.A. is based solely on their location. So in the show, they control a bridge across the neck. And so right now, they've got prime real estate, and that's just about it. He only really fights well against his, you know, his inner division. So going back a couple seasons, you have the Red Wedding. I feel as though Seattle Seahawks walk into what used to be St. Louis and now L.A., and that's just their Red Wedding every single time. And, you know, that kind of leads it to a nice little stab in the back. So anybody want to make an argument for or against Walder Frey being the L.A. Rams of St. Louis?
That was perfect. That's the best comparison I've heard. That was amazing. Great job.
Yeah, no, that was amazing. You got the geography right. You got the makeup of the team correctly. You got the fact that they absolutely make me cry correct. So I'm with you 110% on that one, James.
I've never seen the All show, right, yeah. But sounds like a good description. But we've got a new quarterback, so we have hope. So hopefully this won't be the same sorry Rams we've been seeing the last couple of years.
You know, I didn't even think about that. You know, the Rams go through quarterbacks about the same rate as Walder Frey goes through children.
ouch.
All right, so that brings us up to Seattle. So you'll probably like this one a lot, Justin. I picked Bron. You know, he kind of rose up out of nowhere. He's always got a quip. He always plays with swagger. Some would say he's borderline dirty. But, you know, at the end of the day, they just get ish done. So, you know, what do you think about that?
I like it. Bron is definitely one of my favorite characters. I think he's kind of got that swagger about him that I think meshes with the team really, really well. And that, you know, people who like him really like him, and people who don't like him definitely dislike him. An easy guy to root for if you're on his side. So I am down with Bron.
All right. And so last but not least, that brings up San Francisco. And this is another character that's become much more prominent this season, and it's Sander Clegane, also known as the Hound.
Yes!
You know, he started off as he started off as an imposing individual, if he was slightly flawed, because, you know, that's Jim Harbaugh, man. I mean, he might be imposing, but you can only be so imposing with Walmart khakis. After an ugly separation from their previous regime, in this case Harbaugh and the show Joffrey, you know, they struck off on their own, where he developed a bit of a, you know, kind of screw it attitude, complete with some retirement and being left for dead. You know, so that goes really well with all the 49er retirements, huge drop off. But you know what? Now we may finally start seeing them come back to relevance. He's getting some stuff done, as featured in the seventh episode this past season, or eighth episode this past season. I heard a lot of reaction to that one. Anybody want to make any comments?
That was fantastic. He, after this last episode, he has become one of my favorite characters. And I'm so glad you compared us to that, because if he is able to find his rivals who have once wronged him and wronged his people, a.k.a. the Seattle Seahawks, and chases them down with an axe and chops their heads off, that would be amazing. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think it's a great comparison, because he used to have a high position. Now he's very, very low, and things will almost certainly end sadly and with his demise, just like the Niners. So good job on that one.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for letting me talk a little nonsense in your divisional preview. I'm sure some people will disagree. If you want, you can hit me up on Twitter at @Boiler_James. In the meantime, though, keep a lookout for our other divisional previews and see where your team falls.
James, thank you so much. That was awesome. I cannot wait to hear the rest of them. All right. Once again, big thank you to James for that. So, guys, now we're going to cover our all NFC West division team. And I will be honest, I think that we have one of the absolute best all division teams. We'll start off with the offense. And specifically, we'll start off with a couple of we'll start off with the quarterback. Does anybody have any objection to Russell Wilson here? Any thoughts on Carson Palmer, anything like that? Let's start with you, Brian. What do you think?
Honestly, I have no objection. I think, as I've said a million times, health is a skill, and Carson Palmer's proven to be someone at his age that we can't count on as much as we would like to. So knowing the strength of Russell, the winning personality of Russell, that's where I would go.
Okay, sounds like we're all on the same page there. I won't turn this into a Russell Wilson gush fest. I'll save that for another show. Now let's turn attention to the running backs. We went with two of them, and this is an area where we had a little bit of disagreement. We start off with Todd Gurley. I think we're all on board with Todd Gurley. What do you think of Todd Gurley there, Jared?
Yeah, I was really impressed just how quickly he came back from the injury, and it was that week four against Arizona where he just, I'd never seen him fully healthy, and he just jumped off the screen, and he had a couple games like that. So it really made me excited because the Rams are so devoid of talent on offense. So, again, with health, if he can stay healthy, I think he'll be a top two or three running back in the NFL for hopefully years to come.
He definitely surprised me. Let me ask you this, Jared. When they made that initial pick of Todd Gurley back during that draft, what were your thoughts on that?
I didn't think running back was that big of a need. He was coming off an injury, and it's a top 10 pick. So, yeah, initially I was kind of like, oh, another running back. We already have Trey Mason. And but, yeah, he's been amazing, and I can't imagine where our offense would be without him. I mean, Jeff Fisher's done horrible in picking offensive players, but that's kind of the one exception. So looking back, I'm definitely glad they took him.
Yeah, so it sounds like the big fight is for the running back two position. Now, Charlie, the 49ers have a really good running back, but he wasn't our selection. Are you okay with that? Do you think it should have been your guy? Tell us why he should have come from the 49ers and why you think he didn't.
Well, listen, Carlos Hyde is definitely a very special talent. He hasn't had any trademark games like Thomas Rawls has. Unfortunately that one trademark game was when we were gearing up for Marshawn Lynch. And, instead of seeing 24, we saw Thomas Rawls, who refused to step out of bounds and ran for the most rushing yards ever against the 49er defense. So that was definitely a signature game for him. Although his sample size is a little less than Carlos Hyde's, Carlos Hyde's had two seasons, stopped by injuries. So I really couldn't fight too much to say Hyde over Rawls. Hyde has a ton of potential. Amazing, his signature move, I would say, is that spin move that he put on the Vikings defensive end in week one of last year. And he definitely refuses to go down. But, Thomas Rawls is a great player. We'll just see how he is after that injury.
And that brings me to you, Brian, because this is what it ultimately came down to when we were putting this together. Thomas Rawls versus David Johnson. And to this day, I'm scratching my head how I let you convince me to put David Johnson on there over Thomas Rawls. Please re-enlighten me on this one because, man, I don't know what we were thinking.
I think it was a simple choice. Thomas Rawls, ACL injury. I think one thing we can all agree on is I believe the future of NFL running backs is in the NFC West with Rawls, Johnson, Hyde, and especially Gurley, who looks like just one of those transcendent talents, the best since Adrian Peterson, the way that he came into the league. I was the one that saw that Arizona game up close in slow motion in some cases. Some of my friends sent me some nice vines of that, and it was ugly. But as far as Johnson and Rawls, the minute Johnson took over, he led the NFL in total yards. His pass-catching ability, I believe, is much better than Rawls. His running ability, I think, is on par with Rawls. Anyone who watched the game in Philadelphia on Sunday Night Football watched David Johnson just run his way in to the end zone on multiple occasions. Thomas Rawls has had some flashy plays. David Johnson has had some flashy plays. I think David Johnson's size, his pass catching ability, and ultimately his blocking on passing downs is what sets him apart from Rawls.
All right. And I will definitely grant you that David Johnson is the bigger threat out of the backfield to catch it. But you talk about their running skills being similar. I don't see that at all. In fewer games, Thomas Rawls had 830 yards to 581 for David Johnson. Thomas Rawls led the league in average yards per carry at 5.6 yards. And guys, spoilers, Seattle does not have an elite offensive line. Doing that behind that offensive line is incredible. And that to the fact that in basically twice as many games played, David Johnson lost two fumbles running the ball and one receiving the ball. I have a very, very difficult time with the argument that David Johnson is a better player. I think he's clearly a worse runner, and the argument is ultimately, is his receiving enough to make up for the difference? I'm not convinced. Charlie, what are your thoughts on this one? Who do you think between the two is the better?
So one of the points that you made about the Seahawks offensive line not being a very good line, I think that is one of those media narratives. Honestly, their offensive line in the way of pass blocking is garbage. But Tom Cable has those guys tied to the hip, zone blocking very, very well. And honestly, with zone blocking, you don't need to be that good. You just get in front of the defensive lineman and you let the running back make the correct cut. And that's what it's all about. So to say that Rawls is better than Johnson for that reason, I don't think is valid. But overall, I side with Rawls being the better back. David Johnson, we injured Chris Johnson when we played in San Francisco last year. So we didn't see a lot of David Johnson up front. But I got to see all kinds of Thomas Rawls, and it wasn't pretty. So I would vote Thomas Rawls above David Johnson.
All right, Brian, what is your reaction?
Well, that's fine. You guys can say what you will. I think the proof will be in the pudding this year. The last thing I will say about it is the offensive line being so atrocious and Russell Wilson's running skills are actually something that would help Thomas Rawls as pass rushers are getting through that line quickly. It's allowing Rawls to hit his hole much faster. Most defensive linemen are going to have to stay at home with Russell Wilson. They aren't going to be able to scramble towards the ball on play action. And these are things that only help Thomas Rawls hit a hole quicker and have less tacklers to avoid as he's making his cuts into the secondary. That's not something David Johnson gets. And I will tell you, the right side of the Arizona line last year was Lyle Sendline at center, Ted Larson at guard, and Bobby Massey at right tackle. And I'm telling you right now, that is a dumpster fire that we have improved this year.
That's a fantastic point. No defensive end can crash down the line in Seattle because of Russell Wilson. That's a great point.
The hilarious irony is for years I've been hearing about how Russell Wilson has been a product of his running back. Now I'm hearing it the other way around. We just can't win up here in the Northwest. All right, moving up to the wide receivers. We went with three, two outside guys in the slot. Specifically, we went with Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd, and Doug Baldwin. I will just say real quick right off the bat that according to Pro Football Focus, Doug Baldwin was the most effective slot receiver in all of the NFL, and it wasn't close. So I was very happy to get him in there. I think he's finally starting to get some recognition for all the great stuff that he has done. But let me ask you, Jared, you got a guy out there in Tavon Austin who's pretty good. Did you have any thought that he might maybe crack the all NFC West team?
You know, I'd have him a solid four. I can't really argue over the guys he had in front of him. I mean, Austin, he just doesn't have the complete game right now. And I think a lot of that just is poor quarterback play, poor offensive coordinator, not really utilizing him well. I think he's really talented. I hear all these things, how he's going to catch 100 passes this year. I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. But I think he is a tick below the other four. But I am excited for him this year. I think they're going to just have Goff get the ball out really quick a bunch and just give it to him in open field, see what he can do, and get him involved in the running game as well.
All right. Brian, let me ask you. Okay, for me, Larry Fitzgerald, it's been well established on this show that I have a borderline unhealthy man crush on Larry Fitzgerald, so I was probably the top pusher to get him there. But Michael Floyd or John Brown, who's better and why?
And that is a very tough call. So I believe that John Brown and Doug Baldwin bring redundant skills, and I believe Doug Baldwin is a much better player at his position at this point in his career. I believe that having that height and that speed on the outside, Michael Floyd combined with the talent of Doug Baldwin, I think makes for a better mix of talent, and that's why I chose Michael Floyd.
All right, and Charlie, who the heck is catching passes in 49er land right now?
Torrey Smith can catch a go route.
The question is, can Blaine Gabbert throw a go route?
We did see one in Chicago last year. One. Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, Eric Rogers, who's coming over from from Canada, has been just wowing people in camp. But no one has pads on. No one's playing press coverage like the Seahawks will. So we'll see. But he was very highly sought after and got one of the biggest contracts given to a Canadian Football League player. So we'll see. Very tapered optimism, but that is the reason why they didn't bring back Anquan Boldin, is because of that guy and, you know, a couple other big body wide receivers that we have.
Okay, and finally at tight end, we've got Jimmy Graham, who, I mean, this is a little bit tough because his knee was shredded. I think if it's pre-injury Jimmy Graham, it's not even close. Anybody with any thoughts on who else should be there? Let's start with you, Jared.
Well, I'm excited about Tyler Higbee's rookie out of Kentucky, who has a checkered off the field, but was amazing. He caught 8 touchdowns in 8 games last year. So hopefully maybe in a couple of years he can get there. But yeah, other than that, there's just not a whole lot of tight end talent in this division.
I was going to say that, I mean, we almost need to go with a blocking tight end. Our running backs are going to be so dominant that you know, maybe a Jermaine Gresham or a high-end blocking tight end might even be more important than a Jimmy Graham in this offense.
And Charlie, same question as last time. Who the heck is your tight end nowadays?
Well, honestly, I'm very excited about Garrett Celek. You know, Chip Kelly did very well with his brother over in Philly. I'm extremely excited to see Garrett Celek take another step forward. Journeyman guy that we picked up off of undrafted free agent. So we'll see. You know, definitely not on the level of Vernon Davis in his prime, but I'm excited to see what he can grow into.
All right. An area where the 49ers do have some representation is the offensive line. I'm just going to go through the whole group and kind of let you guys comment on them on the whole. We went with Joe Staley at left tackle, Mike Iupati on the left guard position, Patrick Lewis at center, Evan Mathis at the right guard, and Ron Havstein at the right tackle position. So let's start with you, Charlie. What are your thoughts on this group right here?
Oh, that's a dominant offensive line. Joe Staley is probably a top 5 to top 10 left tackle. It's just so hard watching him in that terrible dumpster fire of an offensive line that we had last year. I mean, he was blocking 2 guys at some points trying to make up for Alex Boone, who was next to him. It was a bad offensive line, and I would love to see him in that group.
What do you think, Brian?
Well, I'll tell you, Staley and Iupati being reunited is just a monstrous line on the left. Evan Mathis coming over from Denver to Arizona, I think Pro Football Focus had him as the top run-blocking guard in the entire NFL last year. We have a little bit of trouble at center. We didn't have much to choose from at center. Right tackle is okay, but I'm telling you, if we run left, it's 4 to 6 yards every time.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. The one Seahawks representative on this offensive line is still probably our weakest link. But so it goes. I think at least right now, the NFC West is pretty weak at the center position. What do you think, Jared? How are we doing on this offensive line?
Yeah, I think we're okay. This is probably the weakest unit of anything in the NFC West. Just it's amazing how all the teams seem to have really good D lines and pretty average or below average offensive lines. But I think if you combine all those, we have a pretty good one, but individually they're pretty bad. I mean, the only Rams representative was big Rob Havenstein, and he didn't allow a sack as a rookie, and he's a pretty good run blocker, so I'm excited about him. But, yeah, overall, we could use an infusion of talent at O-line in this division.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I look at this group, and I think that that's a group that a good team would have at offensive line. But am I wrong to think that the Cowboys just right now have a better offensive line than this group? What do you think about that, Brian?
I honestly think you could say that about every division versus the Cowboys. Top 10 center, top 10 left tackle, guards. Their undrafted rookies are amazing there, Lyle Collins. So they have a great offensive line in Dallas.
All right, guys, we're going to move on to the defense. And let's go ahead and stick with that defensive line. When we put it together, we went with a kind of a hybrid three-man front. You know, in today's NFL, things are so multiple. You know, the outside linebackers could just as easily put a hand in the dirt. So we went with Michael Bennett and Robert Quinn as our defensive ends. So let's go ahead and start with you, Jared. Is it even possible for anybody else to have a better set of defensive ends than we have right now?
No, definitely. I mean, we left off a lot of good people on the D-line this division. So we got 6'7" super deep starters, all pro. So yeah, that would be killer, especially the one against the O-line of our division. Yeah, there'd be no match.
Yeah, I feel like if there's anybody who may have been wronged a little bit by just how deep the defensive line is, in the NFC West when it comes to this, it's probably the 49ers. Charlie, is there anybody we don't have on the defensive line that you think should have made it from your team?
No, not anyone that as of right now or even projecting into next year that I think would be above those guys. I mean, Ian Williams is a force on the defensive line, but can you put him above either of those two? No way. You know, and Armstead's going to be amazing this year, but he's no Michael Bennett. No, sir. I'd rather take, you know, Michael Bennett than 10 Eric Armsteads.
Yeah, and same question for you, Brian. Are there any Cardinals that we could have had over Michael Bennett and Robert Quinn? I just don't know who in the NFL you could put over those two.
Yeah, I don't even think it's close. You look at those two and they strike fear. And we haven't even talked about the interior yet, which is just completely nuts for us. So Quinn, Bennett, it's not even a conversation.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this group so scary is you can just as easily move Michael Bennett inside like what the Seahawks do and then bring somebody else at a pass rushing position from the outside. And so we have Aaron Donald right plopped in the middle, who I think is – maybe next to J.J. Watt, the best interior defensive lineman in the NFL. Disagreement on that one from you, Charlie?
Absolutely not. He is definitely the best. I remember a game in 2004 where we were at home against the Rams, and or 2014, I should say, and Colin Kaepernick was trying to go for a QB sneak, and the offensive line was pushed back into him, causing a fumble. Guess who was in the middle of that? Aaron Donald. No way is anyone better than this guy. Wasn't he the defensive player of the year last year? Am I wrong?
I have no idea. I will throw that
he
out
was,
there.
Yeah, he's Pro Brian, Football Focus number one player, but yeah, they ranked
that's
him
what
as
it
number
was.
One. But I think Watt won it, but yeah, I can't remember exactly.
And so two quick questions for you, Brian. Does Robert Quinn scare you as much as he scares me? And two, how are the Cardinals going to be using Chandler Jones, who we have on here as an outside linebacker in this upcoming season?
Robert Quinn puts fear in every player in the entire NFL. His speed off the edge is unbelievable. Aaron Donald, he's a how is that even possible player? That's what I call an Aaron Donald. You just don't see people with his size and his skill on the interior of the line very often. Chandler Jones is an outside linebacker. It's hard to have a guy who has 12 sacks. You trade a second-round pick for someone like that at his age. So I was shocked when Steve Keim pulled off what I considered the robbery of the century this offseason. Chandler Jones is going to be a rover for us. He's stout in the run as well. And we're going to have a lot of fun moving him around in our hybrid blitz schemes that James Betcher likes to run.
Just to finish out the linebacking core, the other side, we have K.J. Wright as the other outside linebacker. then Bobby Wagner and Navarro Bowman over the middle. So I look at that crew and the same question, who can possibly have a better group of linebackers than this? Not a lot of people realize, but over the last 2 years or so, Casey Wright's actually been a better player than even Bobby Wagner. He's really an absolute force at the outside linebacker position. He's incredibly stout against the run, and he's one of the very, very best outside linebackers in pass coverage. And Navarro Bowman looked good last year. I expect him to be 100% back from that knee injury with another year removed. What do you think about that, Charlie?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I thought it was very inspiring hearing Navarro talk about how pissed he was to be number 61 on the NFL's top 100 list. I think he's ready to come in with a vengeance. He got his All-Pro status last year, but you know, there were a lot of plays where he just didn't look the same. He wasn't able to cut. He wasn't able to change directions very well. And I think he's going to be 100% this year, and it's not going to be pretty. And coupling off what you said about KJ Wright, I remember, what was it, last year, maybe 2 years ago, he was injured, and people were running and passing all over the Seahawks defense. As soon as he comes back, that stops.
Yeah, exactly. He's really an essential piece to it. Jared, do you have any thoughts on this linebacking group?
Yeah, the linebackers are amazing in this division. I mean, at first I was like, oh, man, Alcoholtry didn't make it, but I can't put him above anybody. I mean, everybody is just phenomenal, all-pro level. And, yeah, definitely think it's probably the best linebackers in any division in the league. I mean, maybe Ogletree will be there in a year or two. He was awesome last year before he got injured. But, yeah, definitely a phenomenal group.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about our corners in here. We kind of cheated a little bit. We went with three. As a surprise to nobody, we went with Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson, who I think are two of the – elite number one cornerbacks in the league. Then we also put Tyrann Mathieu in here, the Honey Badger. He's kind of a tough guy to place. Brian, can you just tell us a little bit about how teams use Tyrann Mathieu and what we can kind of expect out of him?
So he is basically the wild card in the Cardinals defense. 40% of the time he's at safety, 60% of the time he's a slot corner. I think for contract purposes, Honey Badger would like to call himself a slot corner. The Cardinals call him a safety, just like they do Deion Buchanan. However, I would also term him a slot corner. He is unbelievably hard to block. He's very slippery, and he makes tackles that other players his size wouldn't even attempt. I've termed him the Steve Smith of defense. He's just a rabid player with instincts that transcend most players at his position. He just has the ability to get to the ball and make the tackle quicker than anyone could ever think could happen. And for that reason, I think he obviously deserves a place on this list. And the way that he finished last season should not take away from the way the NFL views Tyrann Mathieu, which is easily one of the top five secondary players in the NFL, in my opinion.
I'm not going to ask you guys so much who else you think could fit in here, because I think that this one's pretty cut and dry in this category. Here we have at corner Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson, two of a very small handful of players who legitimately have a claim to being the best corner in the league. So let me start with you, Jared. Richard Sherman or Patrick Peterson?
So Rams wide receivers are so bad, like you never really see them going up against either of them. Gosh, I don't know. I think they're the two best. I know people say Revis, but I think Revis is old and these two are by far the best. Sherman is just so good at covering his side of the field. I mean, you just can't complete a pass on him. But Peterson goes all over the field. He can return. He's more physical. I mean, I think that just one and one A, I can't really, it's like splitting hairs to me.
All right. Same question, Charlie. Richard Sherman or Patrick Peterson, who's the better of the two?
We can cuss on this. I can't stand Richard Sherman, so I'm going to say Patrick Peterson. Okay. But I got to say, against Patrick Peterson, when Michael Crabtree was a Niner, he owned Patrick Peterson, and I can't stand Michael Crabtree now. So, I can't say Richard Sherman either. So Patrick Peterson.
All right, Brian, I feel like you and I might disagree on this one. Patrick Peterson or Richard Sherman?
I think you know where I'm going to go with this. If I had a kid, I'd name him Patrick. If I had a dog, I'd name him Peterson. When it comes down to it, he led the NFL this year in passing yards against. One mental error the entire season in Chicago for Patrick Peterson. That side of the field has become Deion Sanders-like territory. And ever since the Cardinals, I say we, but the Cardinals discovered his diabetic issues, this player has completely changed his body, his diet, and everything about him just it screams the best corner in the NFL, in my opinion. He follows the best player all the time, whether they're in the slot or out wide, and he makes every play except for one last year. He made every play. So I have to go Patrick.
And I thought you would, and to the surprise of nobody, I'm going to go with Richard Sherman here for a couple of reasons. I do agree that Patrick Peterson had the better year last year, even though Richard Sherman had another terrific year. But to be honest, that was probably the first great year out of Patrick Peterson. Before last year, he was pretty good at actually getting beat and giving up touchdowns. So I'll have to see him do that a little bit more before I'm willing to say he's as good or better than Richard Sherman. And the other thing that Richard Sherman does better than anybody is take away the ball. Quarterbacks are terrified to throw his way, not because they're afraid to have the ball hit the ground, but because they're afraid that it won't, and instead it's going to be going the other direction. Patrick Peterson has, I think, the best athleticism of maybe any player in any secondary in the NFL. But in terms of ball skills, I think it's Richard Sherman. So that's my vote on that one. Moving on to the back half of the secondary, we went with my guys for a strong safety, free safety, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. This is the least part of the reason why we put Tyrann Mathieu at slot corner, though, because we needed to get him in. I think Earl Thomas is the gold standard in the NFL for safety, and I've said before, to me, he is the straw that stirs the drink. He is what makes the Seahawks defense work. He is the reason the Seahawks defense has been the number one defense for four consecutive years. That being said, Brian, you guys have a really, really good defense over there. What are your thoughts about the safety position?
You're absolutely right about Earl Thomas. Biggest man crush in the division from me for Earl Thomas. Now, as far as Cam Chancellor goes, I disagree with that decision, but I think I was outvoted. I personally would go with Deion Buchanan. I think Cam Chancellor's days of guarding tight ends is over. And I still think that they have him do that a little too much. I saw Jermaine Gresham beat him in Seattle. I saw Olsen just go right up the seam on him a couple times against Carolina. I'm not the biggest fan. I think he's on the downswing. And I think Deion Buchanan or even the safety out of San Francisco might have a better claim for the strong safety spot in the NFC West. But I think I was outvoted.
So both of the plays you referred to were blown coverages. And I think that had as much to do with the fact that Cam kind of held out last year and skipped all the training camp. We saw a lot of miscommunications earlier in the year, which really came back to bite us on those plays in particular. So I feel like Deion Buchanan is a player that is much, much better than people realize. So can you kind of inform us a little bit about who he is and what he does?
Sure. We invented a term in Arizona. It's called the dollar backer. He's a strong safety in body, but a linebacker in scheme fit. So Deion Buchanan's in the box, I think 70 to 80% of all plays run. And he has the athleticism to backpedal, cover your tight end, as well as go right up and hit someone like Zach Thomas in the old Miami defense. He is a tackler supreme. Because of his size, just like Tyrann Mathieu, he's very slippery on blocks, and it just it's a pleasure to watch. I mean, the kid is young, and he's learning this new linebacker position, dollar backer, and I think he's just growing in confidence. He's going to be a special player for a long time. Another guy that came out against the Eagles on Sunday Night Football this year, his first interception for a touchdown. I think there's many more to come from Deion Buchanan.
Charlie, you have anything to add here?
Yeah, definitely a big fan of Deion Buchanan. Comes from WSU, Pullman, Washington, the town just about a couple hours east of here. And honestly, I don't know what safety you're referring to that has a claim to take Cam Chancellor's spot on this list. You know, Eric Reed had a good first 2 years. His last 2 years have been really shaky. I would say Jimmy Ward had an amazing, last year was really good for him. But they've actually changed him to be an outside corner. So he's not even a safety anymore. Jaquaski Tart laid some wood a couple times this year, had a couple picks, but just too much to prove still. So either it's Cam or Buchanan in my mind. But I got to say Cam. And you nailed it on Earl Thomas. Everyone gives Richard Sherman a lot of credit. But if Earl Thomas wasn't there to allow for press coverage to happen, Richard Sherman is not athletic enough to be able to press and then recover. It's Earl Thomas that you said stirs the drink there in Seattle. You're absolutely right.
All right, Jared, comes down to you. Who should be in that strong safety spot here for the NFC West?
I mean, I think right now it's Cam Chancellor, but I mean, I think Deion Buchanan's probably going to pass him this year. Maybe I favor the older players a little too much, but yeah, Deion Buchanan is really good. And yeah, it's just comparing. It's kind of hard because they play two different positions where Chancellor's more of a traditional strong safety stumper, but Buchanan can do so much. So yeah, but I mean, again, we have like the best secondaries of any division in the NFL. I mean, we're splitting hairs here. These are all just phenomenal players. So, and we didn't even mention, the Rams don't really have any good safeties now that McLeod left. We didn't even mention Tremaine Johnson, who finally had a good season last year after a lot of injuries. And if you saw the game against the Lions, completely shut down Calvin Johnson. And although I agree, he's the fourth best corner in the elite in the division, but yeah, we've got a super deep division, including the bench, and I would put that up against any of the other division's offense any day.
No, I completely agree. I honestly think that when this is all said and done, the best unit that any team puts on the field is going to be the NFC West defense. What do you think about that, Brian?
Absolutely. I mean, what I was telling the entire group was that no one's going to score 10 points against us. I absolutely believe that. Even if we were to run the ball the entire game and never throw one pass, which is ridiculous with our receivers and quarterback, we still win the game 21 to 3, probably.
I assume you feel the same way, Charlie.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no way anyone's going to run on us. There's no way anyone's going to pass on us. This is the best defense out of any division by far and the best unit, like you said.
And then real quick, just to finish off with the special teams, we're putting Hauschka in at kicker, Hecker at punter, Peterson returning punts, and my guy Tyler Lockett is a kick returner this year. I promise you this time next year he'll also be one of the starting wide receivers. Jared, any thoughts on the special teams?
Yeah, we nailed it. Really, really no argument here. Pretty solid group all around, but yeah.
Brian, we can all agree that special teams is the most important unit in football, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Any thoughts from you, Charlie?
Yeah. So the Rams punter, the Hecker, this is the guy who blew up one of the Seattle defensive ends. And then when Michael Bennett went after him, he buckled. Is this the same guy, Hecker?
Yep. That would be him. Honestly, one of the funniest things I ever saw.
Me too.
Blindsides Cliff Averill, and then as soon as he gets in his face, curls up into the fetal position, and then they come at him again later in the game, the exact same thing. He just immediately curls up in the fetal position. I got a pretty good laugh out of that. All right, that wraps up our all-division team, the all-NFC West team. I think we can put up against anybody. So now we're going to talk a little bit about our projections for this upcoming year. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to go kind of position by position, saying start off with first place, second place, third place, last place, and who we think is going to be there. And so let's go ahead and start off with you, Charlie. Who do you think is taking the NFC West crown this year?
I knew you'd do this. It's got to be the Chickens. I mean, the Seahawks. You know, I would love to say the Cardinals, and honestly, I pull for them anytime they play you guys. But I just don't see another year of Carson Palmer being healthy like he was. And even at the end of the year, he wasn't. And is the Honey Badger going to be back at 100%? I just don't see that either. So I got to say it's going to be the Seahawks. And then second place is going to be the Cards. Third place is going to be the Rams at 7-9, 8-8, you know, just like a broken record. And then the 49ers are going to be on the low side, 4 wins. On the high side, 7 wins. My over-under is 5.5. I'm going to take the under.
So, Brian, he's got Hawks over Cardinals. I'm going to guess you disagree.
Yes, I absolutely disagree. And if I was to break this down scientifically, I'm going to start with schedule. I totally believe that the Cardinals got a break with the way the schedule fell. Tom Brady will probably not be playing for the Patriots when we play them in week one. He'll definitely be playing against Seattle. You have Green Bay and Carolina in a back-to-back. The schedule just breaks out easier for the Cardinals, which is nice to say. Our bye week is in week nine, right in the middle of the season. As far as Carson Palmer missing time, could it happen? Of course. His two major injuries are both knees, which I don't think anyone's holding against Tom Brady. So what I would say is, do I believe the Cardinals are going to be in first place? Absolutely. Do I think it's going to be close? Absolutely. I think it's a 12 or 13 win team that takes first and an 11 or 12 win team that takes second. I think that's going to be the Cardinals by a hair. And I think we're going to split our head-to-head games. How about you, Seattle?
We'll get to me in a second. Let me ask you, Jared. Right now we're split 1-1. Who's taking the NFC West this year?
That's tough. I think, like we've mentioned, it all depends on Carson Palmer's health. I think the Cardinals have more talent spread out across their positions. I mean, I really like the addition of Chandler Jones. They had no pass rush, and even their first-round pick in DT will really provide a pass rush, because that was kind of their biggest weak link last year. So I'm definitely scared about their defense, but then I'm also scared about the defense of the Seahawks too. So I really think, yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, not playing Tom Brady is a big break. Gosh, I would say, I hate to sound waffling, but I would say I'd give a slight edge to the Seahawks. It'd probably both be 12-4, and maybe the Seahawks win in a tiebreaker. But yeah, I think just the fact that they have Russell Wilson, the best quarterback in the most important position, and they have such a solid defense, I'm just going to give them a slight edge because of the uncertainty with Palmer's health.
Well, I got to say, if it wasn't for the Honey Badger, I would absolutely say the Cardinals. But is the Honey Badger, he was injured in December? Is he going to be back to full health? That's hard to say. You know, if he was, I would say, like I said, I would say the Cardinals. But what do you think, Brian?
Well, let me give you the inside scoop. So when you read the local area reports, he's already running. He's already cutting. The local reporter, Darren Urban, is saying that he doesn't even look like he was injured. This is a completely different injury than the one 2 years ago, which was a multiple ligament tear. This is a clean ACL. The surgery went perfectly. Everyone is guaranteeing he's going to be back for camp. I am not worried about the Honey Badger in the least. This is a much easier recovery than the last one. Do I believe health is a skill? Absolutely. Am I scared like nobody's business? Absolutely. But to say that he's not going to be the Honey Badger, I actually, I don't agree this time. I would have told you 2 years ago that I think it's going to take him probably 10 to 12 months to come back. This time, I think we're looking at an Adrian Peterson type recovery, just based on what he's doing in camp now, running and cutting. He wasn't even close to that 2 years ago.
So you're saying he's not human?
I honestly don't believe at his size he is human. I mean, he is the Steve Smith of defense. That's the way I put it. No one is more passionate. No one tackles as ferociously as he does at his size. Personally, I never want to see him in a dark alley, but I love him to death. Thank God he's a Cardinal.
Yeah, at least when I look at the rankings, I'm pretty much assuming people are healthy for the most part. So, you know, for me to this, as you can imagine, I'm going with the Seahawks number one. And to me, it comes down to a couple of things. The Arizona offense, some of their best players are not young, and they're getting older. And in the case of Carson Palmer, they're old, coming off of an injury, coming off of an absolutely devastating performance. And I said this before, I'm not entirely convinced that the Cardinals have the mental toughness to recover from a loss like that. That's just not something I've seen them demonstrate. And so I anticipate them taking a step back this year, whereas the Seahawks, I picture the exact opposite. Cam Chancellor, who, as I mentioned earlier, was a bit of a problem early in the year, leading to some communication issues, busted coverages, will be here for all of camp. I'm very happy with the way our draft went. I think that Tyler Lockett, a second year, as good as Doug Baldwin is, I think by the time the year is over, Tyler Lockett will be number one on our depth chart. And we started so incredibly poorly to begin the year before finishing kind of per usual, very, very strong. I think that for the Seahawks to not take first place, they would need to repeat that performance. And I just don't see that happening. Brian, let me ask you, what do you think separates the Seahawks and the Cardinals in your mind that has the Cardinals at number one?
It's this simple. I believe football is still won in the trenches, no matter how much we're turning this into a primetime game. Who can pass rush? Who can run block? Who can rush the passer? That is where games are won. I do not believe Seattle has an offensive line that's worthy of their championship caliber, their pedigree. We have improved our pass rush. We have improved our run and our pass blocking. And as far as mental toughness, I think we proved that in Seattle last year in primetime when Andre Ellington ran to the end zone, laughing the entire way.
With the skeleton dance, the white boy dance, that was awesome. I was also doing that same dance in front of my TV.
Even I would go to that dance for MVP.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can complain that the Cardinals don't show up when they're on national television, so it makes me very proud to be a fan right now.
I hope you're right.
Wow, that is gooey and gross. And I'm moving on. All right, so we figured out our 1 and 2. Three of us went with the Seahawks, and then Brian is drinking the Kool-Aid. Let's talk about the race for last place. Rams and Niners. I think we're all on the same page here, but who's taking third? Who's taking fourth? Jared, what do you think?
Definitely think the Rams have more talent. They have a tough opening schedule. I mean, they play the late Monday night game on the road, and then they have a short week and play the Seahawks in their quote-unquote home opener after a USC game. And I think that's one of their only two games at home in the first half of the season. They got to fly across to London 6,000 miles. So the Rams definitely had to pay a high price by moving back to LA with all those international games in the next 3 years. But I think just talent alone, the Rams will take it. The 49ers just seem like they're not even trying. I mean, they have $50 million in cap space. They just didn't sign anybody in the offseason. They didn't really make any big moves in the draft or anything. I think they're just kind of know they're going to be bad this year and hoping to maybe get a new quarterback next year at the top three pick. But I'm excited. I mean, the Rams, at least they've improved every aspect of their offense this offseason. Upgraded the quarterback. Gurley will be healthier. They got a couple of good wide receivers in the draft and Farrell Cooper and Michael Thomas I'm excited about. So their line that was all rookies last year will be another year into the league. So I think their offense will be a little better. But, yeah, I mean, I think talent-wise, there's no question the Rams are better. But they'll probably, because the division's so tough, they're probably going to be their token 7 or 8 wins this year again.
All right, Charlie, let me ask you, are the 49ers destined to be cellar dwellers this year, or is there hope of them surprising?
I honestly don't see it. They're going to finish last. I see them as a, like I said, line at 5.5, and I'm taking the under. I think Jared nailed it on the head. They're going to be a top 5 pick team. And yeah, when you have $50 million in cap space and you don't spend any of it, you're sending a message loud and clear to your fan base and your roster that this year is not the year you're going for. Now, do I have a problem with that? Absolutely not. I totally agree that this is a 2-year rebuilding process, and to spend money on guys like the Giants did or the Miami Dolphins would be foolish. You know, it's time to use all of these young players that Balky has drafted, the most draft picks in the last 5 years by any team, and now it's time to start paying those off. If you can't pay them off, then it's time for a full regime change after 2 years. So that's where we are. I do have some optimism, but it's very, very tempered, as you can tell with my mood and what my ranking is for the Niners. So last place is what I'm thinking.
All right, what do you think, Brian? Is Rams 3, 49ers, is that the consensus?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I think there are three absolutes in this world. On Game of Thrones, winter is coming. When it's Mother's Day, you call mom and tell her you love her. And finally, Jeff Fisher will finish 7-9 or 8-8 every year. Take it to the bank. I do not anticipate the 49ers winning more than 6 games, which makes this an easy call.
Yeah.
All right, then let me ask you this, Brian. What is more likely to happen? The Rams finish second or the Rams finish last? And why?
The Rams finish last is easily the most likely to happen because I don't think there is any way, this is a homer talking, that the Seahawks or the Cardinals will not finish first and second in the division. Even if Drew Stanton is our starting quarterback for 8 games, I think we still go 9 or 10 wins this season. Especially with the depth we have everywhere else and the talent everywhere else. There's rebuilding projects going on in both of those cities, and I can't see it.
All right, Jared, same question for you. Do you think the Rams would be more likely to finish second or last place?
Probably last. I could see Goff or Gurley getting hurt and the offense just going in the complete dumpster fire, and then they lose a couple of close games and their home crowd sucks and they do all the traveling and it could just be a disaster. But yeah, it would be tough to pass both. I think the Cardinals and Seahawks are both top 5 teams in the league, maybe even top 3 or 4. But yeah, I mean, if everything breaks right for the Rams, they might, you know, get to 10 wins, but I think that's a little bit too optimistic. I think the most realistically, the Rams are a year away. Their offense being a little older and Goff in second year. That's where my optimism lies.
All right. Now, Charlie, let me ask you this. Imagine the 49ers have a scenario where everything breaks right, where all your optimistic ideas come to fruition. What does that look like?
7-8 wins. That's what it looks like, which is the only way that we're going to finish third. We don't have enough of a talented roster to get anywhere past that. And honestly, 7-8 wins is ridiculously optimistic. I don't think there's any way it happens.
But let me ask you this. How much faith do you have in Chip Kelly and Trent Baalke?
Okay, so my friends will definitely attest to this. I hated Chip Kelly. I couldn't stand him as a coach of Philadelphia. I thought his mastermind ideas were awesome. And then the next year happens, Harbaugh goes, and then all of a sudden I got this patsy for a head coach for a while, and then boom, then I get Chip Kelly. I was very frustrated. I've read up on the guy. I've started to like him, but the thing that just scares me, the reason why Bruce Arians and Pete Carroll are great coaches is their emotional intelligence. The way they can relate to players, the way they know when to push a player and when to pull back. And Chip Kelly, as you heard from the owner of the Eagles, doesn't really have that. And you look back into his track record, he's never really needed to have it. You know, in Oregon, no player's going to mouth off to him. You know, he has a huge program. But in the pros, you have to be able to have that intelligence to know when to push a player and when not to. And that does scare me. So we'll see.
So I think this is going to be where I'm the big outlier. I'm higher, I think, on both the Rams and the Niners and lower on the Cardinals than most. I look at the 49ers and I see a team that just from ignore everything and look at the people who are on the team, I think that talent is pretty favorable compared to what Chip Kelly took in Philadelphia. So I don't think it's incredibly unreasonable that he can have some success there early. Likewise with the Rams, I think that if Jared Goff hits, and I'm a big, big Jared Goff believer, that's a team that could be very relevant very quickly. And I still question the ability of the Cardinals to replicate their success from last year. And I question, I know you disagree, Brian, but I question their ability to bounce back from such a devastating loss like they had in the playoffs. So, while I think it's going to be Hawks 1, Cards 2, Rams 3, and Niners 4, would not shock me to see 2 and 3 flip-flop, depending on a couple of factors there. Speaking of me bad-mouthing the Arizona Cardinals, Brian, what would be your dream case scenario for your Cardinals this year? What do you think is the most optimistic thing for them?
I think personally that using that loss as fuel, you could see a team that wins 14 or 15 games. That's how talented and how deep the Arizona Cardinals are this year. And if we are going to use the framework that injuries are not going to be considered, and if I can sit here and say that 16 games, if I can get those out of Carson Palmer, I don't see any way we don't finish first and have at least 12 or 13 wins by the end of the season. It is going to be fun to watch this year. And I don't even think everything needs to go right to get to 12 wins. Carson Palmer missed time 2 years ago. I think the team won 3 out of 4 games, 4 out of 5, something like that. I truly believe that Carson Palmer, after his injury, the way he moved around in the pocket, the innovative ways that the coaching staff has used virtual reality to train him on the subtleties of quarterback movement within the pocket, I love what's going to happen this year. I believe it's going to be fuel to the fire. And like I said, I think it's first place in 13 wins or bust this year.
All right, let's finish up with you, Jared. What is best case scenario for the Rams this year?
Definitely, I'd say about 10 or 11 wins would be best case. Probably 10 is realistic. But yeah, if Goff really clicks in the new wide receivers, and then Robert Quinn is healthy and Alec Ogletree's healthy and we find a free safety off the street. We still don't have one, but yeah, we have the talent. I mean, I can't believe we beat the Cardinals and Seahawks 3 out of 4 games last year and then lose to awful teams like the Bears. And I think the biggest reason was we had such awful quarterback play. I mean, dead last in the league in just about every category. So I think just Goff, if he's slightly below average at the beginning of the year and clicking towards the end, maybe we'll win 10 games, but yeah, that would be optimistic. Probably 7 or 8 is where we're going to hit, though.
Charlie, anything to add?
Yes. Yeah, so you made a comparison of the 49ers team that Chip Kelly is taking over compared to the Philadelphia team that Chip Kelly took over. That Philadelphia team was way better, especially on offense. The Niners team might be better on defense, but DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, that offensive line, Shady McCoy, I'm sorry, the Niners offense is nowhere near that talented. I can't compare it that way. I love the compliment, but I just can't compare it that way.
Yeah, and I understand that. When I say that, I'm definitely looking primarily at the defense, but I do think the offensive line is good. And kind of like we talked about earlier, I think Carlos Hyde, if he's healthy, could be a real, real player in this league. When I say it compares favorably, I'm not necessarily saying they're better. But I don't think that when you look at the whole 53, that there's that much separation between the two. And I don't think it's totally crazy for me to say that.
Okay. And Kaya said one thing. Kaepernick and Chip Kelly, there's about a 10 to 15% chance that Kaepernick's just physical ability and Chip Kelly's imagined play calling and just kind of style he runs, if he has his head on straight and he's healthy, there's about a 10% chance he could be a top 10 quarterback and really surprise. I mean, Kaepernick's fallen down a ways, but that's kind of the one dark horse I see is the 49ers having a really good season.
Hey, Charlie, who's your starting quarterback next year?
Blaine Gabbert. There is no way there. I'm sorry. This has been a huge pet peeve of mine. The whole thought of just because Colin Kaepernick is mobile, that he is going to be good under Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's offense does do well with a mobile quarterback, but tell me in Philadelphia where he had a mobile quarterback. If you look at all the quarterbacks that Chip Kelly was successful with, it's been quarterbacks who have had quick draws, quick decision-making, and that does not describe Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick throws a baseball pitch for a throw, and that takes him 45 seconds to release the ball, and safeties are already breaking on the ball. I would love it if you were right, Jared. I really would. I am a huge Kaepernick fan, but after watching Colin lose the mental game aspect of the game every single week, I just don't think that Chip Kelly and Colin Kaepernick are going to mesh for that reason, and Chip Kelly doesn't even know how to manage a guy like Colin Kaepernick. And Kaepernick's still talking to Harbaugh. Like, that is the reason for this holdout, is the Kaepernick-Harbaugh thing. And I don't see Chip Kelly working with a guy that's not bought into a system, bought into being on the team like Kaepernick. So I think Blaine Gabbert's going to be our quarterback. And I know a lot of people say the real American, all this stuff, Blaine Gabbert sucks. You know, that's another media narrative. And if you really do watch Blaine Gabbert, he's a good quarterback. And he is mobile. He's almost as mobile as Colin Kaepernick. In fact, if you go back to that same Bears game, he was fantastic in that game and scored, a 43-yard touchdown to tie up the game. But within a horrible offense that was under the offensive coordinator, Chief Chris. Now they've brought in a guy just for Blaine Gabbert and Chip Kelly. So we'll see. I hope you're right, though, Jared. I would love Kaepernick to be back, but I don't see it.
I think we can all agree Colin Kaepernick's number one skill is looking like Squidward. Brian, do you want to wade into the quagmire?
Yeah. I was just going to agree with Charlie. What I remember of Blaine Gabbert in Missouri was a mobile quarterback with quick mental skills to make the decisions needed. And with Chip Kelly, he is a megalomaniac. And what he wants is a quarterback that will say, yes, sir, all day long. That is Blaine Gabbert. He has the mobility to get things done, the ability to learn that playbook, I believe, in a much faster way. He does not improvise as much as Kaepernick ever did. And I think that's what Chip Kelly's looking for. So I totally agree with Charlie that Gabbert's going to be the starter. Do I think that's the right call? Maybe not, but I definitely think that's what's going to happen.
All right, guys, that will do it for us. That was an absolutely terrific show. Pretty close to being on time, which is not bad. If you want to communicate with us directly, you can always hit us up on Twitter. We are at NextFanUp. You can also email us. The email address is nextfanup@gmail.com. If you want to hit any of us directly, what's the best place to find you, Brian?
Well, I'm on Twitter, Jones_mobile, @Jones_mobile.
What about you, Jared?
You know, I'm really bad on Twitter. I'm on Facebook a lot, Jared Murphy, but I need to get on Twitter more. It's Rams Superfan. But yeah, I'll work on that.
All right. And what about you, Charlie?
I'm on Twitter @the Charlie Smith, and Charlie is spelled Charly.
And if you wanted to hit me personally, you can catch me on Twitter. It's @KOREIS. That's my last name. You can also find me on Facebook. I'm also active in Home of the 12s, a big Facebook Seahawks group. I think that we've pretty much said everything we need to say. And in the immortal words of Han Solo, get us out of here, Chewie.
So there you go, the super fans of the NFC West. They gave their thoughts, and I too believe it's basically the Seahawks and the Cardinals division, and then there's the Rams and the 49ers. I really disagree with the Rams' thoughts. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But first, the last place team in this division that I see are the San Francisco 49ers. I was down on them last year. I'm still down on them this year. I've got them with all of one victory, and that's in week one against the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis. That's it. The 49ers going 1-14. They will, in fact, have the first pick in the draft. We'll see. The Rams. I am really, really down on the Rams. And as I look at their schedule, especially to start off with, I mean, I don't know where you can see them getting a victory. The LA Rams of St. Louis are pathetic. They're not very good. And I just don't see them winning more than two games this season. I really don't. And I'm sure this is going to be one of those teams that I'm the most wrong on, because really it's hard to go 2-14 in the NFL. And the Rams did go 7-9 last season, but I don't see an increase in the quarterback play, not with a rookie quarterback. And honestly, I'm not a Jeff Fisher fan, never have, probably never will be, even though he ends this show every single week. The Cardinals and the Seahawks. I think these two teams are so similar, they're going to finish the season both at 13-3. Here's the problem, and what's really going to stink for the Cardinals for the postseason, is the three losses that I have for the Cardinals are against Carolina, against Minnesota, and against Seattle, all NFC teams. The losses I've got for the Seahawks, I have against the Patriots, I have against the Cardinals, and I have against Green Bay. that one loss against the Patriots will give the Seahawks the tiebreaker for better conference record and thus the number one seed going into the NFL playoffs. The Cardinals, because they're a wild card, will end up being the fifth seed. And this is going to be one of those things that you're going to hear on talk radio for months and months and months about how we should be reseeding the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. We'll get all into this during our postseason preview that will happen after all of the division previews have been finished. But that's the way I see the NFC West. How do you see the NFC West? Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. Or, of course, you can leave your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Please subscribe to our show. You can do it on iTunes or anywhere great podcasts are heard. We're always at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup, and I hope to hear from you very soon. Leave us a review on iTunes. That would be fantastic as well. And I will talk to you all again next Thursday with another division preview. In the meantime, here's my least favorite coach ever, Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.